And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you in rather unusual setting. I'm actually standing outside, and I'm not standing outside live. I'm standing outside, I guess, several days ago. I'm actually making this recording on Saturday night, April the 30th, 2005. And the reason I'm doing this is because I can't be live in the studio the way I usually am live in the studio, because I have a prior commitment, and that has necessitated me being someplace else. So I've decided to actually test out a system that I'll be making use of over the summer, where I'll be traveling around the world by boat and by train and by rickshaw and whatever other means come to mind. The idea being to get from New York City back to New York City by going all the way around the Earth without actually flying. So what we've set up here, we've set up a little tiny portable MP3 player and recorder that actually allows you to record voice and sounds and music, all kinds of neat things, and then burn a CD of it later on. So yes, what you're listening to right now is, if all goes well, a burned CD of this recording that I'm making. And the interesting thing about this is that, whoops, oh great, I just dropped my phone. Hang on, I gotta go down here and pick up my phone. This kind of thing is gonna happen more and more. I'm actually being rained on right now. This basically is a very portable, very flexible system. It allows me to pretty much go anywhere and do anything live as I'm speaking. And right now, I'm standing on a porch, looking out as the rain pours down. Actually, it's not pouring down nearly as hard as it was a few minutes ago. It was almost frightening how hard it was raining. In fact, there was even some thunder. If we're very lucky, we might even hear some thunder on this recording. So basically, this will give me all kinds of flexibility as I travel around the world. 1 week you may hear me on a boat, 1 week you may hear me in the middle of a desert, 1 week you may hear me on a train. You never know what's going to happen next. The real challenge will be getting the data uploaded, getting the data to be burned to a CD, and getting it to the station on time. These are all marvels of technology that would not have been possible a mere couple of years ago. But through the miracle of smaller and smaller devices, and bigger hard drives, and faster bandwidth, we're able to do almost anything. And now I'd like to actually be what I think might be the first person at this particular radio station, and maybe at several radio stations, to actually get inside his car and do the radio show from inside the car. In fact, I'll even be driving as I do this. Bear with me for a second. Okay, and let's start up the car here. Okay, this really allows me the maximum flexibility that I've ever been able to have before, where I can actually just get the seatbelt on. It's very important, children, when you are driving in a car, always buckle up. All right, and what I have to do now is I have to back out of a driveway, so I might sound a little distracted while I'm doing that. You have to always keep your eyes open, and it being pouring rain outside, you have to be doubly careful. Okay, it's a long driveway, so I have to really watch out that I don't hit anything or anyone. Okay, almost at the end of it now. Now, I don't intend to bore people with these mundane things, traveling around town, doing some chores, things like that. Although, you know, I certainly could. That's definitely a possibility. But that's not what this radio program is about. This radio program is about issues. This radio program is about progress of various sorts, and the continuing story of the various issues that we've been going through over the years. Now, that ties in very nicely to why you're not hearing me live today. As you may recall, I was part of, I guess, a roundup of people last August into September, at the Republican National Convention, to sum up. And you can listen to this radio program online, the program where I document what exactly happened. And boy, this device would have been cool to have for that as well. So with any luck, I'll get arrested again, and then we can have even better coverage of it. But what happened was I was simply standing on a street recording people with video cameras as they were marching down the street as part of it wasn't even really a protest so much as it was kind of just a parade with music and various other bits of cheer that were going on. But the police blocked up the entire street and arrested everybody who was on the street, whether or not they were part of this particular protest. And what that resulted in is my being held for about, 33, 34 hours in really horrible conditions. Now, if you've been following this radio program, you've known that the charges were dropped. They had charged me with disorderly conduct, along with many other people, up to 1,000 other people. And, excuse me a second. I really have to apologize for the condition of these roads. This is awful. I feel like I'm driving in some third world country here, but they just do not fix the roads in the United States. I don't know why that is, or at least in New York. Okay. So anyway, what happened was, I would always use your turn signal too. Very important. So many people don't do that. And I just want to stop here by the stop sign for a second just to comment on that. So many people, okay, somebody behind me, so let me go. But so many people just don't do that. They feel they're above that particular requirement. And I just don't understand it. It doesn't take anything out of you to turn your turn signal on. Yeah, people know what you're going to do. I guess that's a disadvantage if you're trying to get away with something, but there's no reason not to. All right. So basically, the charges were dropped against me. In fact, I think I was one of three people where the city decided to drop the charges rather than wait for the actual trial to happen and lose the case. And I think the reason they did that was because of the tremendous amount of publicity that putting all this on the website and having radio programs and videotapes made available, I think that sort of told them that, you know, this is really a bad idea. We made a big mistake. So, okay, that part of the case was over. For me, anyway. Other people still had to go through it. Some people were even found guilty, which I found to be amazing. Guilty of disorderly conduct when there was really no documented evidence of any such thing. So the next stage of this whole thing is, of course, the lawsuit, fighting back, getting some kind of justice out of all of this. And that's what I'm doing today, the normal day of this program, which would be Tuesday, and if I can calculate properly, I think that would be May 3rd, 2005. I'm supposed to be deposed. It sounds like such an ominous phrase, but no, I'm being deposed by the city, and what that means is basically I have to deal with a lawyer from the city who's going to try and get me to contradict myself or say things that aren't entirely true. And, you know, I've had this happen before. Go ahead. I'm waving you on. Go ahead. I'm flashing my lights now. Boy, people are so stupid sometimes. You'll get to hear how frustrated I get driving around here because it really gets to me sometimes. Yeah, I think people should take a driving test every year, you know? It doesn't take very much time. If you can parallel park, you know, you shouldn't have a license because you're going to hit something or somebody. And if you know how to do it, you should be able to do it every year. You should be able to take an eye test every year. Oh my God, look at this puddle. Okay, I'm going to go through this puddle full speed. Listen to this. Wow, that was cool. Okay, now my car is kind of bucking a little bit, so I don't think it liked that very much. All right, I won't do that again. We have the... should I finish my rant about the driver test? Yeah, just we should have our tests renewed every year, all right? I've renewed my driver's license, I think, three times now, and I've never had to take an eye exam again, you know? And that's not right. I could be completely blind, and they don't even know this. All right. Anyway, so as far as the Republican National Convention lunacy that I went through and so many other people did, now it's time for us to cite our case in front of a New York City lawyer. And this is the same thing that happened with the MPAA when I was deposed in front of them, trying to get me to contradict myself, trying to get me to say things that prove their case. In this particular instance, though, I don't think it's going to be very easy for them to prove that they're right in any way, since there's so much video evidence, so much audio evidence, so much collaborating evidence of people that went through the same thing last year. And you know, they'll say things, they'll ask me Were you here at 7:56 p.m. or were you here at 7:57 p.m.? Well, you can't remember? Well, then your whole story must be in doubt. And of course, that's the kind of intimidation tactics they will use, and I'm getting ready for that. But it's not going to help them. There are certain things, I don't remember what specific time I was going through all of this. It was kind of a traumatic experience. So, oh, that's nice. That's really clever. They put a little cone in the middle of the street and I almost ran right into it. I wonder how many people have wrecked their cars on that. There's a big pit in the road and a single little solitary cone warning you of that. And in the rain, you really can't see this. And it's starting to come down. Yeah. Okay, hopefully I won't get into an accident as I'm doing this radio show. That would also be a radio first. So I'll be reporting on this next week, assuming I'm able to be in the studio live next week and I'm not arrested for contempt of court or something like that, which very well could happen because I do have a lot of contempt for morons, and if morons happen to be in court, well then, I guess I have contempt for them there as well. But I hope the system works. I hope the system is on our side. It certainly has helped for the most part since what transpired last year, and it's good to be on the winning side. But there needs to be more. There needs to be all kinds of ramifications for what happened. People should be held personally responsible, including the mayor, including the police commissioner, people who lied, people who said things that were not true, and the Republican Party, of course, for engineering this whole thing of sweeping people off the street, apparently, to protect George W. Bush in some bizarre way. And boy, it really is starting to come down now. I didn't know it was going to be raining this hard as I was doing this. Let me say a couple other things, too. Originally, I had planned on doing this radio program while walking around. And the interesting thing about that is our society has evolved to the state where you can walk around now talking to yourself and nobody really thinks anything of it because so many people use cellular phones now. So many people use cellular phones now and it looks like they're talking to themselves. They're simply talking on their phones. They have these little microphones attached to their faces and they simply do a whole lot of conversation as they're walking down the street. Now, you can't really tell the difference between somebody who actually is talking to themselves and somebody who is talking on the telephone these days. So it makes it a lot easier for somebody like me to walk around and do a radio show where I'm simply talking into an MP3 player. And normally, you know, I get rather self-conscious of doing something like this in public where I'm talking to nobody in particular inside a group of people. But since most of them will think that I'm talking on the telephone, then I guess it doesn't really matter anyway. Of course, it'll seem like I'm not letting the other person talk at all. And unfortunately, oh, I've missed a traffic light. It's the first light I've missed. Actually, it's the first light I've hit at all. It's a lot easier for that reason as well. So I'm looking forward to being able to do other radio shows from the road as well. Yeah, I'm gesticulating in my car. Is that a problem for you? I'm getting stared at by the person next to me. It's really not that unusual. Okay, so you can look forward to hearing all kinds of bizarre things as I experiment with this little device. Now, I also want to talk about, and you know, this is where the show gets a little interesting because I'm going to be reading some things. The show is no exception. I'm going to be reading listener mail. I'm going to be reading some news stories. I'm not going to be doing this while I'm driving because I'm not that crazy, so I might just pull over to the side and do this. Let's see, where can I pull over? I think maybe I'll... there's not really a good space here. Hang on, I'm crossing train tracks now. All right. I think maybe I'll pull over here and just read a couple of bits of listener mail. Hang on, it's always, whenever you want to pull over someplace, there's always somebody directly behind you who wants to go exactly where you're going, and it's such an annoying pain. Okay, I'm just going to pull over here for a moment. I've never been in this parking lot before in my life, and of course somebody is right behind me. All right, let's take a look at some news that has been taking place. Yesterday I was in Manhattan. This person's pulling up next to me. You know, I really can't stand being crowded in all the time, everywhere I go. You know, there's just too many people around. Okay, you know what? I'm backing out now if you're going to pull right next to me. I have no interest in dealing with this nonsense. It's like you're always being watched, you know? It's like people are constantly monitoring other people. And now the person's following me out. I don't believe this. I'm being stalked live on the air. You know what? I can play this game too. You know, you want to do a race around the parking lot? I'll do that. Don't think I won't. All right, I sure look suspicious now. All right, I think they gave up that chase, but that's really kind of bizarre. All right, turning on the light here so I can actually read a story. I was in New York City yesterday, and I witnessed some of the Critical Mass, which is basically a monthly bike ride that takes place every, I think, third Friday of the month. And people basically ride their bicycles throughout the streets of New York. And they have a great old time. But, you know, when the Republican can... Listen to that rain. Wow, is it ever coming down? Okay. What happened was, you know, that guy is still circling. What is going on here? This person's really... It's like he's trying out every parking space in the parking lot. But I sure know how to pick them, don't I? Maybe I should go someplace else. Well, anyway, they have this bicycle ride once a month, third Friday of the month, starts at around 6 o'clock or so. And I just happened to be in Union Square Park yesterday, which is basically where a lot of people gather to take part in Critical Mass, or where a lot of people gather for all sorts of things. What happened yesterday was really very strange and bizarre, but not that unusual, based on the actions of the New York City police. Lately, they've been arresting people for riding their bicycles. Now, they haven't done it the last couple of months. This was the ride for April. Last ride was March, and then you know, winter months before that. And there were no issues, no encounters of real magnitude with the police. Things went very peacefully, and they've always gone very peacefully. The only times they don't go peacefully is when the cops decide they're going to start arresting people, basically because they have orders to arrest people. Sort of the same thing that happened to everybody at RNC, but it also happened to Critical Mass at RNC. In fact, ironically enough, a Critical Mass ride was scheduled for right before the Republican convention started, and that sort of set the tone because the police clamped down on them. Now, what are they clamping down on? I don't know. People just riding bicycles in the street, apparently that's a crime. Now, I don't like it when bicyclists run through red lights. I don't like it when pedestrians are intimidated by bicyclists, but that's not what we were seeing in this particular case. We were seeing a bunch of people just getting together and riding their bicycles in a large group. Wasn't a big deal. Nobody was threatened by it, but there was this reaction. Anyway, yesterday, 34 people were arrested for disorderly conduct. Now, we all know what nonsense that charge is, disorderly conduct. It doesn't mean anything. It just basically means we want to arrest you and we're going to charge you with something, and that's just the way it's going to be. So 34 people were arrested. The event held on the last Friday of every month has been at the center of various court hearings in the past. Now, the NYPD has been trying to force riders to get a permit for this particular news story is referring to it as a protest. I guess in a sense it is a protest because you're riding your bicycle protesting the fact that all these cars are on the road. But, you know, you're really just riding your bicycle with a lot of other people. And, you know, how is simply riding a bicycle protest? It's kind of sad when we have to refer to it that way, but that apparently is the way it's being referred to. The NYPD has been pressuring them to get a permit. It's very difficult to do this because it's not organized. It's not one group of people. It's many groups of people. They're all over the city. And it's really crazy because people get arrested who aren't even part of it. Delivery people get arrested because they have bicycles, and apparently it's the ultimate crime. It's gotten so strange, so bizarre that... you never know what to expect next. But one thing that we have learned is that the city has just gotten so corrupt as far as the way they enforce rules, the way they intimidate people, the way they try to get their way over everything else. The whole stadium nonsense and the bid for the Olympics in 2012, that just demonstrates it all the more. The fact that no matter what, we're going to get our way. Doesn't matter how many people are inconvenienced, doesn't matter how much money we're going to waste, we're going to do it our way. And there's really precious little any of us can do about it. Well, of course, I don't believe that. I believe there's all kinds of things we can do about it, but we have to get together. We have to organize. We have to not feel like we're losing, even though many times we are losing. What else is of interest this week? Mario Cuomo, he says some very interesting things. The Republicans, as you may know, are trying to rewrite the Senate rules to put an end to filibusters. And it's not hard to make it sound like they're doing something good, you know, shutting people up who just won't stop talking and are trying to keep them from passing their particular bills. But Mario Cuomo says the country will experience exactly the kind of tyranny of the majority that James Madison had in mind if this kind of thing is allowed to go through. Cuomo, in the Democratic Party's weekly radio address, said Senate Republicans are threatening to claim ownership of the Supreme Court and other federal courts, hoping to achieve political results on subjects like abortion, stem cells, the environment, and civil rights that they cannot get from the proper political bodies. How will they do this? By destroying the so-called filibuster, a vital part of the 200-year-old system of checks and balances in the Senate. The Republicans say it would assure dominance by the majority in the Senate. That sounds democratic until you remember that the Bill of Rights was adopted, as James Madison pointed out, to protect all Americans from what he called the tyranny of the majority. It sounds nearly absurd when you learn that the minority Democrats in the Senate actually represent more Americans than the majority Republicans do. Democrats blocked 10 of President Bush's appellate court choices during his last term by filibustering. Bush renominated 7 of them this term, and Democrats are threatening to block them again. They contend those 7 are too sharply conservative to fill the lifetime appointments. Under Senate rules, 60 votes are needed in the 100-member body to end the filibuster. Republicans are threatening to use their majority to change the rules and require only a simple majority vote to end the filibuster. The Republican senators should instead start working with the Democrats to address all the serious problems of this country in the proper forums, in the Congress and in the presidency, leaving the judges to be judges instead of a third political branch controlled by the whim of the politicians in power. Now, of course, Mario Cuomo being the former governor of New York, state of New York, and he says a lot of good things. I wish he was somebody who was running for some powerful offices, because he might actually have the guts to make some changes. And speaking of changes, did you hear the press conference last week, President Bush in front of the public for, I think, the first time this term, talking about how he's going to be overhauling Social Security? Yeah, it's kind of frightening. The biggest changes to Social Security since Social Security was formed back in 1935. You know, first of all, I question whether or not very many changes are needed in Social Security. But if there are changes that are needed, is this the guy you really want to have making the changes? Is this the guy you want reshaping things for decades to come? You know, it's the guy doesn't have a grasp of so many issues. The odds of him having a grasp of what is needed with Social Security is just, it's too phenomenal for me to take seriously. All right, so this is something that I think we all have to be very, very cautious of. Now, Bush has this new proposal to fix most of Social Security's long-term fiscal problems by cutting benefits now promised to future retirees in all but the lowest income brackets. Yeah, that sounds really smart, doesn't it? He has significant work to do on his personal accounts proposal, which he says would encourage individual ownership and offer the prospect of better returns for retirees. Despite making that argument for months, recent polls have found public support declining, with the majority now opposing that approach. Democrats in Congress remain nearly unanimous against it, and with even some Republicans wary, there has been little progress legislatively. But the president is still claiming progress. He learned how to do that in Iraq, didn't he? Claiming progress when actually there is none. I don't know. This gets me rather nervous. I mean, I had never really counted on much from Social Security to start with, but I think, based on how much money is being squandered on so many things that will never benefit us, now the things that most people do have to look forward to, those are being sacrificed to pay for these things. How do you think these wars get funded? How do you think we spend tens of billions of dollars just like that? It's because other things don't get paid for. And it's really sad. It's really tragic. I think it's criminal. And someone has to do something about it. Hopefully, some of those people in Congress will have the guts. All right, speaking of wars and things that were a big waste of time, Vietnam, yeah, they call it the American War. And it ended 30 years ago. Thousands of Vietnamese have taken to the streets of Ho Chi Minh City to celebrate 30 years since the communist victory that ended what is known as the American War. And you know, I know already there are people standing up and shouting at the radio, say it wasn't a victory, they didn't win. Well, come on, you got to deal with it. They did win. They did win. They imposed their regime on the city, on the country that this country, United States, was trying to prevent. All right, they won. They kicked our asses. Yeah, more of their people lost lives than our people. Many, many more. I think it was something like 2 or 3 million Vietnamese that lost their lives. And we only lost 58,000. Now, I'm not by any means demeaning that. 58,000 Americans is a tragedy of amazing proportions. And something that I think we should still be pissed off at to this day for having sent all those people to their deaths for nothing. And that really was a war for nothing. Now, look at Vietnam now. Do you know who Vietnam's biggest trading partner is today? It's us, the United States of America. Do you know most people in Vietnam don't even remember the United States as their enemy? And that's probably why we're their biggest trading partner. The country certainly leaves a lot to be desired, but it has not proven to be any kind of a threat to our way of life. The people there are prospering in many ways. And just think how much different it would have been if we hadn't tried to mess things up over there, if we hadn't tried to impose our will on an unwilling populace. Now, does that remind you of something? It reminds me of something. It reminds me of the current policy towards various countries around the world, not the least of which is Iraq. And it's just going to keep getting worse because I don't see this ending anytime soon. Yeah, there have been elections, there have been people appointed, but how many people have died needlessly as a result of what I consider to be really bad foreign policy, really wasteful foreign policy? And what is the future going to hold? What about other countries? What about other regimes? Are we just going to keep trying to topple them all? Eventually, somebody is going to speak up, somebody with a big enough stick to actually do something that can really hurt us. And I think most of the world will understand why they had to do that. You know, we can live with all kinds of different regimes. We can live with all kinds of different ways of doing things. We don't have to agree with the policies. We don't have to agree with the way people are treated. In the end, it's up to the people. It's up to the people of a particular country to decide what they want. Now, a lot of misguided people compare the fight in Iraq for a so-called democracy with what the United States went through in the 1700s. Of course, the biggest and most dramatic difference is that nobody invaded the United States and forced them to do this. We fought against the people who were occupying our country, the British. We fought for our independence. We did that. We didn't have somebody come in and force us to take their side and fight for a particular regime. Actually, you know, I'm going to turn this fan off. I realized it might be causing some noise. And I'm not driving now anyway, so I don't need to see. It's still raining a little bit, though. I'm sitting in this parking lot. I might start moving because there's all kinds of suspicious people around here. I think I'm at a 24-hour laundromat or something. That's the biggest difference. You know, if you want change, if you want change in a regime, the people have to do that changing. It will never be right if it's done from the outside. Now, look at the fall of communism. Look at all the people who marched in the streets and forced their leaders, not without bloodshed in many times, but they did force their leaders to see reason and to step down and to change the way they do things. All right, now if Ronald Reagan had had his way and had invaded various Eastern Bloc countries and imposed democracy at you know, the end of a gun, I don't think it would have been quite the same at all. In fact, I think a lot more people would have fought against it. And what's happening over there right now, it's the biggest waste. It really is. A waste of money, waste of lives on so many sides. And for what? For something that didn't exist, for weapons of mass destruction that weren't there. Yeah, we got this nasty guy out of power. We got a nasty person out of power. At what price? And what guarantee that we're not going to have another nasty person in power? Don't forget, Saddam Hussein was our friend. We helped him stay in power. We gave him money. We gave him weapons. This kind of thing seems to happen over and over again. Okay, and of course, North Korea is another one of those countries. They have called U.S. President George W. Bush a hooligan. It's great how communist regimes just love using that word, hooligan. And they said it expected no solution of the international standoff over its nuclear program during the Bush administration. The comments by North Korea's foreign ministry spokesman followed a White House news conference last Thursday, at which Bush described North Korean leader Kim Jong-il as a tyrant and a dangerous person. You know, they're basically just trading barbs here, you know? Bush says one thing, and Kim Jong-il says something else. I don't know why this is even news, you know? It's basically two people insulting each other. I'd like to lock them in a room together and just see what comes out of it. It would be a very interesting display of emotion or something. Bush is a hooligan bereft of any personality as a human being, and a Philistine whom we can never deal with. That's according to the ministry spokesman who said this on Saturday, according to North Korea's official Korean Central News Agency. I gotta say, they have a very grandiose way of speaking, and a way of insulting people that I think is better than the way George W. Bush insults people. He calls people tyrants, and dangerous, and mean, nasty, bad. And here we have bereft of any personality as a human being, a Philistine. I don't think Bush has ever used the word Philistine, except maybe on a job application. North Korea does not expect any solution to the nuclear issue or any progress in North Korea-U.S. relations during his term. Bush is indeed a world dictator whose hands are stained with the blood shed by innocent civilians. I'm hard-pressed to find things I don't agree with in this statement, and I know there's lots I don't agree with coming out of North Korea, if not just about everything, but their perception of Bush, right on, you know? It's right on the money. What does that make me? Does that make me a traitor? I don't know. What do you say, person in the car is still staring at me? Okay, well, they can't hear me. Over more than 4 years since Bush's inauguration, North Korea has shown utmost magnanimity and patience, said the spokesman on Saturday. It can no longer do so, waiting for any shift in the U.S. policy. Well, I don't know what that means exactly, but sounds like they're still mad, and I think they're going to be mad for quite some time. All right, what else are we going to focus on here? How about some listener mail? Of course, you can write to us at otw@2600.com. And let us know what you think of what you hear on this particular radio station, radio program, and what's on your mind. Now, a lot of what we've been talking about lately has to do with broadcasting, has to do with people feeling censored insofar as what they're able to do on radio, me being one of those people, but of course all of our listeners. We're still not able to take phone calls. Obviously, we can't take phone calls if I'm not here. But the FCC has gotten everybody in such a tizzy that people are afraid to do all sorts of things, both on television and on radio. We had the one positive bit of news last week where the FCC actually made a decision that... Oh, you know what? A train's coming. Hang on, I'm going to... try and get closer to the tracks. Well, I'm not being stupid here. I'm just trying to get closer to where the crossing actually is so that you can hear the train go by. I think that'll be kind of a fun thing. Just moving to the parking lot here, moving to Oh, the train's coming right in front of us. You might be able to hear the sound of the diesel there. Yeah, I'm sure you can hear that. That's a slow-moving train, about 3 miles an hour crossing the tracks. All right, so basically, a lot of people are feeling this censorship. Oh, yeah, I was talking about the Saving Private Ryan decision that basically agreed with what most people say, that certain things are not obscene. Certain things are appropriate when discussing war, when showing the horrors of war. You can't paint this with all kinds of nice little flowers and things. You have to show it the way it was. So, yeah, they got that right. Now, if only they could understand that in terms of other forms of art. It's a step, and I think we should recognize it as a step. But many more steps need to be taken. All right, let's take a look at some of the email. We've gotten so much email. I asked for about 100 people to write in and show their distaste for what the FCC is doing. And starting a movement is our goal here. Starting a movement to fight back against people at the Parents Television Council, whatever that crazy group is called, that writes all the letters. They're basically the responsible for all the crackdowns. They saw what looked like a glimpse of Janet Jackson's breast, and all of a sudden they had thousands of people sign a form letter, and the FCC took it all seriously. Yeah, the Parents Television Council, that's who those people are. We have to fight back. We have to be just as strong, not using the same tactics. I don't believe in making oneself out to be bigger than we actually are by having millions and millions of names signed blindly onto forms and make it seem as if each one of those people wrote a letter. No, I want each one of us to write letters. I want each one of us to actually take part in this in our own unique way. And I think those words will be incredibly valuable. Those words will mean something. And I want to read some words that really do mean something because so many people have written in to us. And again, you can be one of those people by writing to otw@2600.com. Dear Emmanuel, please add this email to your list as you endeavor to gain support for a fight against the ability to choose what media we consume. I have been a listener of your various shows for years, and I have been reading your publication for even longer. I just want you to know the kind of impact you have made on my youth. It's always scary to hear this, but it's sometimes true, apparently. I was a teenager in the 1990s. At my high school, the kids looked to many popular icons for inspiration. Stars and sports figures were the people many looked to in order to find popularity. But there were those who were different. We were the weird kids, the ones who looked to people like Jello Biafra, bands like Crass, the Specials, others like that to inspire us. We were the ones asking the tough questions about policy and actions taken by the administration. We started punk bands, led rallies, and at the same time, got good grades. I was different. I was enthralled with computers, technology, postmodernism, and philosophy. I was considered a hacker. And in the purest sense of the word, I was. I strived to share information with my fellow students, help them to understand the responsibility and impact of the blinking lights sitting in front of them. And I owe a lot of the credit to you and the spirit in which you share information and knowledge. You were and still are truly inspiring. Ah, shucks. It's, you know, I hear this sometimes, and I guess a lot of people feel the same way when they're told that they actually are responsible for inspiring people. I mean, yeah, it feels great, but at the same time, you know, you feel like this can't be right, you know, because I'm really just speaking out for myself, my own viewpoints, my own selfish opinions here, and to think that it actually is moving people to do things on their own. But at the same time, then, I look at other people who probably would say the same thing when I say that they inspire me. It's really kind of an even-keeled thing where we all sort of inspire each other in various ways. Because the listeners writing in, that certainly makes a big difference to what I do. Hearing from people, that always is the fuel that keeps me going. Without feedback, I'd be convinced nobody cared, and I'd probably be doing something else right now. That's where the real strength comes from. And I think we can use that strength in all sorts of positive ways. Okay, continuing with this letter. All right, you are still are truly inspiring. Then everything changed. April 20th, 1999, two students killed their classmates, then themselves, in the brutal Columbine massacre. The repercussions of this attack have been felt by many, or rather every school student since. My friends and I were no longer weird. We were a threat. I was a threat. We were no longer allowed to carry our 6 or 7 books in a bag. We were prohibited from wearing t-shirts that may have contained a political message, be it right or left. Shirts portraying religious images were prohibited because they could instill violence. In protest, we walked the halls dressed in all black. We put black tape on our mouths. We organized a memorial for those who had lost their lives. But things got worse. A teacher committed suicide because someone had uncovered emails he had sent to a student that he was having an affair with. It involved a computer. A computer meant me. I was banned from using any computer. I was put on hall restriction. I was added to a suspect list and called to the office every time someone called in a bomb threat or staged a protest. My senior year was hell. My parents, who have always been supportive of my activities, could do nothing. And through all of this, I look to you, to Kevin Mitnick, and to the hacker community for support. Now things are different. I have devoted my college career to teaching technological responsibility and the responsibility of consuming mass media. I have created an online radio show devoted to the implications technology has in our daily lives. I am currently in the process of getting this show, called Living in Sin, S-Y-N, on a local student-run radio station. And to top it all, I am currently in the interview process for a system administrator position at a high school similar to mine, so I can become an advocate for students who may be in situations like I experienced. We need to inform the public that it's not the government's responsibility to tell us how to live, whose values we should keep, or who we choose, or rather how we choose to live our lives. I know this has been an extremely long email, and I thank you for reading it. Thank you for the inspiration and guidance, and keep up the fight. We can win this one person at a time. Signed, Dexter. Dexter, thanks so much for that very kind and articulate and inspiring letter. And I think there are a lot of stories like that out there, a lot of people who were seen not only as misfits, but as threats. And it's sad. It just shows the ignorance that so many of us have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. But we can fight back. We can make a difference. We can make changes of all sorts. It doesn't have to be this way. And the way you make changes is by communicating, by talking to other people, by sharing your stories, by brainstorming, coming up with all sorts of ideas and ways we can do things differently, ways we can do things better. So thanks again for writing that particular piece there. Let's see, we have a whole bunch of other bits of email too, and they're always very good to read, good to hear from people. I live in London, England. I'd love to do what I can to help curtail the FCC's censorship of radio. Having been brought up in student radio, and the website he gives here is raw.warwick.ac.uk, raw.warwick.ac.uk. I think it's awful that not only are you made to be afraid of swear words, but I've been disappointed in the past at the attitude the FCC seemed to have on low-power FM stations. They seem to have eased up on this with many starting up. However, I believe this also has happened because of community pressure. So it shows that this kind of action is not only important, but it works. Thanks for your show. It's great to hear yours and other people's opinions on the news of the day. Signed, Russell. Well, Russell, you know, it's interesting. There has been some movement on low-power FM, but not nearly enough. There's room on the dial for a lot of stations, and there's room for a lot of different frequencies, too. For instance, in this country, we're giving up analog television in about a year or two. And what that means is a lot of frequencies are going to be opened up. A lot. Now, is that going to be going towards community radio? It could be. It definitely could be if there was pressure given to demand that kind of sort, that sort of thing. But I don't think that's high on the FCC's priority list. I certainly don't think it's high on the commercial broadcaster's priority list. Rather, they would like to sell frequencies and make lots of money. But imagine if you could open up space for, say, 10 more stations, and you mandated that those stations had to be run by the community. You know, not existing organizations, not NPR, you know, not commercial entities, And not all religious either. You know, I guess some churches could run community radio stations and do a pretty good job. I've actually seen it happen. But I wouldn't want to see the entire thing taken over by, say, one particular church or by, you know, a small group of people representing some significant population, perhaps, but not everybody. We need different voices, not the same voices, and repeat it over and over again. So, you know, the pressure has to be put onto the FCC for that kind of a thing. Not having the airwaves become just music boxes and monopolies of certain corporations. Okay, let's look at a couple other pieces of mail. Dear Manuel, I'm ready to join the fight against the FCC and what it has done to broadcasting. You know, I sort of like to rephrase that and make it the fight against what the FCC has done to broadcasting rather than the fight against the FCC, because we do need an FCC. Don't get me wrong about that. We need an FCC to enforce technical specifications, to keep radio stations from broadcasting on the wrong frequencies, to make sure that all kinds of restrictions or violations of restrictions don't take place, to make sure the public interest is being served. You know, that kind of a thing. They're not doing that. They're not doing enough of that. All right? They're not watching over the commercial stations and saying, you know what, you're not contributing anything of significance to the community. You're just out here making money. You know, you're playing music from a different city. And you don't even care. You haven't read a public service announcement in 5 years. You know, why are you even on the air? They're not doing things like that. They're looking for instances where someone plays a song where if you listen really hard, you might be able to hear a word that some minister someplace might not like. But why would he be listening in the first place? The louder I talk, the harder it rains. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? All right, let's continue with this letter. I think we must remember that the FCC would not be nearly as big a problem if it weren't for organizations such as the Parents Television Council. For instance, when you visit the PTC's website, which is www.parentstv.org, you will find, amid other nonsense, two links, one on top of the other. The first reads, "Send a gift to the PTC," and the one below that reads, "File an FCC complaint." Two things obviously very important to them. Now, I must say that their campaign to flood the FCC with complaints has surely been successful, as they boast that it's hard to read this. I'm sitting in a car, and the light's very dim, so forgive me if I make common mistakes here by reading the wrong letters. They boast that PTC members sent 245,000 complaints to the FCC last year alone. They claim that they're protecting children. Well, I don't see how preventing children from hearing obscenities or seeing a person naked is protecting them, but if it is, then it's the parents' responsibility to control what their children watch, not anyone else's. Your cause is a good one, and I'll do whatever I can to help. Keep up the good work. Signed, John in Philadelphia. Thanks, John. I do think that there needs to be some kind of quality control. You don't want to just turn on the radio and hear a string of obscenities, but I think the control is pretty much the marketplace. You know, nobody is going to want to listen to that kind of nonsense. No intelligent person, anyway. And so you won't listen to that kind of nonsense unless there's some reason to. And if it's a commercial station, they certainly won't get any sponsors, and they certainly won't get very many listeners. Let the people decide. You don't need this this group of people in Washington, D.C., handing out fines and dictating the way people think and the way people talk. It's just, it's not right, it's not healthy. And legitimate radio stations like the one I'm talking to you on right now simply feel the pressure in very unreasonable ways. And that results in music not being played, that results in phone calls not being taken, that results in thoughts not being expressed, and that is not healthy. All right. Greetings from Canada. I heard your call to arms and off the wall, and I'm offering my vote into your list. I have long been frustrated with the Christian right-wing infestation into the American government and the changes they influence and thus force upon the American people. Being in Canada, I'm not directly affected by this, but one thing about Canada is that our politics are influenced by the interest of corporate America, although this is delayed by a few months, sometimes longer. Myself and others predict that it's only a matter of time until we're all one country under corporate rule anyway. Oh boy. So, anything I could do to help now, I feel benefits the future for both the USA and Canada. also helping the world in the whole process. First on the agenda is censorship. It starts with expletive deleted and expletive deleted, and then moves on to issues and ideals. And soon, one can only praise products and politicians and the system, and no interfering with right to profit or with the interest of those in power will be tolerated. This cannot be allowed to happen. And yes, I see that happening. I see that happening in all sorts of different ways. You can make a movie and have product placement, but you can't make a movie and say, you know what, Pepsi sucks. You can't say that. Oh, am I going to get in trouble for saying that? I don't know. But, you know, you can't express, because there'll be corporate action then against you. They'll say you're defaming them. So you can't express your opinion in various ways. And soon, expressing a political opinion, saying, you know what, Bush is a moron. Yeah, he's a real idiot. I can't believe the guy's in charge of the United States of America. Boy, you know, you say things like that, and then some do-gooder is going to report you for being suspicious, a possible threat to Homeland Security. If you see something, say something. You know, and you lose freedoms in all sorts of different ways, not just through the FCC, but through all sorts of different checks and balances, if you will. All right, let's finish up this letter. I'm not sure of your intentions with this list of emails, but perhaps a moderated blog or mailing list would help keep everyone informed of any issues that need attention, such as FCC hearings and such. I try to keep as up to date on these issues as I can, and would volunteer to provide content and such to aid the spread of information among the lists. Perhaps a forum, wiki, or community blog may be desirable. I'd be interested in helping set this up. Signed, Derger. Well, thanks very much for that offer and for those ideas. Yeah, you know, that's what we need to start thinking about. We need to start thinking about ways that we can make a difference, ways that we can set up some kind of a site, some kind of a forum for people to communicate and actually make change. I guess the first thing to do is to find what sort of change. Forgive me. Uh-oh, another train's coming. Okay, we're actually very close to going off the air. Because our time is almost up. I was going to start driving again, but we need to share ideas, get together on this sort of thing, and that really does make a difference. It really makes so much of a difference when you feel there's a community out there, because there really is a community out there. There are so many people who feel this way. There's so many people who know that something is wrong, but they feel powerless. They feel like there's nothing they can do. And time again, I have seen people realize just how wrong that is, how much power they really do have. And all it takes is communication. And there goes the train. Okay, I'm going to start backing out now. And hopefully I can see, because it's still raining here. Now, I've been doing this radio show from my car because I can't be in the studio at the normal time. So I figured I'd use the MP3 device that I have to record the show, thereby seeing if it works for future radio programs where I really will be on the road around the globe. The hard part, of course, is going to be getting the information to the radio station. If I'm in the middle of Mongolia, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to be able to upload information like this, you know, an hour-long radio program. It might be a challenge, but challenges are what we live for. And I've got to tell you, driving down this road right now with all the bumps is a real challenge, too. That's going to just about do it for me here tonight. You've been listening to a special edition of Around the Wall. No, I don't even know the name of the radio program here. I'm kind of confused because I'm dealing with traffic at the same time. This is Off the Wall. Yes, that's the name of this particular radio program. You've been listening to a weird edition of that as I'm literally on the road. And I'll be back again next week with a more traditional program. Again, you can write to us, OTW. Hang on, I'm going to try to get on the road here. Whoa, okay. Sorry, I had to cut somebody off, otherwise I was never going to get on the highway. Write to us, otw@2600.com. That is our email address, and we certainly like to hear from you. All kinds of feedback, suggestions, ideas, experiences, stories, you name it. We'll be back again next week. Until then, Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have a good night.